Welcome to the Brampton Talks podcast. My name is Nikita. I'm here with Jess Karin and Sushil. Today on the podcast, we're discussing crime in Brampton and continued dysfunction at City Hall. On November 8th, Gail Mouse tweeted that she was attending a roundtable on guns and gangs with Andrew Scheer as chair of Patrick Brown's expert panel on crime. Problem is, that panel doesn't actually exist.
Let's start by reading the tweet, actually. So Gail Miles, at @gmiles_Brampton, first tweet. Pleased to chair Patrick Brown's expert panel on crime. We will make recommendations that can be acted on. Attending a roundtable on guns and gangs with Mr. Scheer, leader of the PC party, today. Okay, side note here, it's the CPC, Conservative Party of Canada, not the PCs. God sakes. We need sustainable resources to fight crime just like Toronto. Brampton will be heard. Yes, from the shadow non-existing panel. Second tweet, after the event. So just to make clear that this wasn't like just some foolish mistake. As chair of Mayor Patrick Brown's expert panel on crime, Councilor Michael Pelleschi's and I, Pelleschi's is her mistake, and I shared Brampton's in capital letters, issues and concerns. Cracking down on gangs, awkward like 10 spaces, through judicial reform would be a step in the right direction. So it's very clear she thought this thing existed, this special expert panel on crime, but this like it literally was a figment of her imagination post October 22nd.
Gail, retire. Just retire and enjoy it. Like, you're not a counselor anymore, technically. Like, I don't understand.
It's a little odd, right? It's like, she's probably so excited about this panel. I know she's gearing up for a regional chair race. I think she really feels it. You know, I'm still active after post-retirement. And then have Patrick Brown put a statement out being like, yeah, this panel actually doesn't exist. This seems like it was just a miscommunication. This is not real. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that when we look at overall crime in Brampton and how to deal with it, we need new ideas to the table. We need a fresh approach. So I think that, you know, it'll make sense for Patrick Brown to have a panel. Who he decides to have on that panel will be a key to figuring out these issues in Brampton. And we see with Scheer's comments and his statement that he released.
Gang, his gang plan that kind of came out of all these meetings is either A, unconstitutional, and a panel, like a bunch of lawyers have come out and spoke out about this plan from all stripes, from all levels of government. From all levels of spectrums of the political spectrum, sorry. And they've all said the same thing. It's unconstitutional. It's completely ignorant of current criminal law. It's kind of frankly stupid. And it really does seem like either they didn't consult like lawyers or judges or people in the field, or it's purposely written this way just to kind of like be a bit of like a fear mongering kind of thing.
I 100% think that that's what it is.
Yeah, it does seem like something that was just created to make it easy to scare people into sharing it.
Yeah, like for example, MP Selena had this great tweet where she kind of cut it up, and she's a Liberal MP, so obviously if you can take it for the grain of salt, but she is correct about some of these things there. It's like, so one of the positions was end automatic bail for gang members. She's like, what? Gang members do not get automatic bail. That doesn't happen. Revoke parole for gang members. That is unconstitutional. Like, you have to have grounds to do these things. You can't just have a blanket statement on this.
Yeah.
Which leads me to, you know, think, what was Gail Miles and Pelleschi's input on these panels? Because it was very clear that Scheer made Brampton a very key part of this. Because he even had a picture where he was at the Prevenor Bussey Memorial. So this was a young man. He was about 19, 20 years old. He was a first or second year university student. He got stabbed outside of his old high school in an altercation. And a lot of facts are being fought through courts right now. And the case itself is being fought through courts. And a couple of people have been arrested over the stabbing. So, you know, there's an emotional tie to this. And it's a very much of a Brampton story. What was the Brampton's input on this? And what was the value of Gail Miles? Does she even understand or speak to a community's desire to kind of combat the rise in violent crime in this city?
Absolutely. And I think if we're going to have people on a panel, they need to bring actual ideas and take an analytical look at any policies, whether it's from a Liberal government or it's from a PC government. They need to bring things to the table that will be relevant to our community and challenge stuff that doesn't make any sense. Like, to me, this seemed like a photo op, and it seemed like, yeah, it was some fear mongering where people were like, yeah, we really do need to deal with those gangs and all that crime that's happening. But like, when you take a closer look, you're like, oh wait, these policies either already exist or we can't do that because it's against the law.
It's like, we'll break the law to fix the law.
Yeah.
Vigilante justice.
Yes.
Easy there. We're not like, you know, Natalie Portman and V for Vendetta.
So this bothers me because I did practice in criminal law for a little bit. And you dealt with a lot of kids and a lot of young folks that were going through this. And a lot of times I used to feel, this is very personal, very anecdotal, but a lot of times I felt with a lot of these kids, is like, these kids are not supposed to be, they shouldn't be dealing with police officers and lawyers right now. They need counseling. They need mentors. Like, they need a big brother. Like, a lot of these kids just need support. And it kind of goes back to our PO Regional Police and some of the policing that happens right now in our community. Is you're missing that community policing, right? You're missing that positive presence within the communities and real relationship building that we've seen successful models in other places in the country and the world. And the policing here doesn't have that same reputation. You know, does more police officers help? Yeah, probably. Like, does harsher penalties? You know, I'm not going to say that that has no impact. Probably does have some. But what are some of the more deeper community-driven solutions to these problems, and where are those voices in some of this planning?
Yeah, and where are the services and the activities and things for youth to actually do in the community so they can get up to some constructive stuff? I think that that's a big part of what Brampton is lacking, is there's really not a lot for youth and young people to do in this city. So it's easy for them to get up to activities that are, you know, less than savory or maybe related to crime.
Yeah, and it's also tough to find a job here. Yeah. Right. So especially if you're a young person, there are a lot of young people, and most people don't even work in Brampton, right? Not everybody can just get a retail job. Mm-hmm. And if you're young, you probably can't necessarily get a warehouse job on a part-time level. They're looking for full-time people for things like that, right? So you're kind of constrained in terms of where you can work, right? I mean, during when I was in high school, I know people that went all the way to Vaughan for a job. Right.
Yeah.
And
Canada's
and,
Wonderland.
Yeah. Paula. Exactly. Wonderland, or people that went all the way to like Sherway Gardens in Mississauga. Right. And they had to borrow their family car to get there. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying is that we don't have local jobs for youth. And
this crime is
bigger. Yeah. Sorry. This issue is bigger than just these kids are committing crime. Yeah. There's obviously some other layers that need to be brought up to this.
Yeah. And I think if we're trying to loop it back, to this, now Mayor-elect Brown, when he did set up this committee, you know, I think there's value in having a concerted effort and trying to find solutions from a city council level. I really think there is. And the last 4 years, you know, there's a lot of criticisms on the lack of action on crime over the four-year span. And the last year they did end up approving budget for an extra 35 like frontline officers or something like that. Like, it was an increase of millions of dollars for the budget to kind of bring Brampton up to speed on the amount of officers we need on the streets. But if we're going to bring back a committee after council is sworn in, you know, we have to think of this in a very comprehensive way and have people on there that are reflective of the community where it's at right now.
That is the key. I think there was a little bit of controversy around him deciding to pick Gil Miles as the chair. For one thing, she's for carding and has been very vocal, especially in regional council about that. And so we need some different perspectives on this issue. We need to see a wider variety of people in age and ethnicity on this panel, if there's going to be one, because it affects our community. We have a higher group of people that are visible minorities. And I would like to hear those people's voices on this panel on crime to see how it affects them and their family members.
We're also the youngest city like in Canada, like the largest city in Canada. We are median age like 35, 36, or average age, sorry. It's a super young community. You can't be pro-carding and like a lot of the other nonsense that's kind of come out of the policing. There's no diversity in the ranks. Right? Yeah. Are you going to effectively police a community when you don't reflect the community? There's a trust factor there that needs to be built up. You can't have cases like BJ Sandhu's and the Human Rights Commission, that decided in favor of BJ Sandhu that he was in fact discriminated against on the basis of his race when it came to promotions or inside the ranks of the policing. Like, you can't have this kind of stuff and then turn around and say, well, you know, here's some solutions on policing without addressing these issues as well. So I'm looking forward to see what kind of solutions come out of city council. I think this is a concern that's top of mind for a lot of folks in the city. I'll give you an example from my house. My brother and I were watching the Raptors playoffs games. This was last year. And all of a sudden we hear this loud noises outside. It's like loud shouting. Like, what the hell is going on? We go to the front door. We look through the windows on the front door. There's literally like 30 kids having a full out brawl on my front lawn. There's like three kids getting their asses kicked on my porch. And I don't live in a community where it's like a high school. I don't live in a community where there's an elementary school and a grade 7 to grade 8 school, like a middle school. But we don't have like a high school in our community. And it's young families. And like it's a good neighborhood, good young family neighborhood. This is a full out brawl, like 30, 40 kids, like 6 police cruisers come. They're all parked in front of my house. I actually put myself into the brawl, break it up. Kids are scattering everywhere. They're high school kids, like 15, 16 years old. There's anecdotal, once again, it's a personal experience, but there's obviously something wrong with that picture.
Well, I mean, you would also see a lot of videos about teenagers fighting each other, and then they would share them online.
There's been tons of stuff. We saw that brawl that happened with the 4x4s at the parking lot near Sheridan College.
That was the international student issue that kind of flared up, and that's a whole different level of crime, right? And there's a lot of issues there that and I actually, you know, we've spoken out and saying, like, you know, the international students, they need services, they need social help, they need housing. They're getting exploited at the workplace, they're getting exploited with their landlords. There's a lot of grand issues here. We need more community-based relationships with our colleges to ensure our kids are doing well. We quite frankly need to shut down some of these fake diploma mills that are taking advantage of students as well and putting a lot of these kids in precarious situations.
And, you know, also the fact that we don't address secondary units in a legal manner, right, just means that, you know, either international students are going to be leaving landlords in a bad situation, or landlords, more often than not, are just going to leave international students in a situation that they can't really, you know, get out of. And so until the government, the municipal government stops, or, you know, city council stops shoving this under the rug, right, a lot of these issues pertaining to youth, pertaining to secondary units, pertaining to, you know, job creation. Yeah. I mean, until we tackle all of this, we're going to keep facing, you know, this festering of crime in Brampton.
Yeah, and then there's also the issue of how Peel Police deals with people on the streets, right? We saw that video recently that went viral of that 12-year-old getting shoved to the ground by 3 police officers and arrested. And that started a conversation of force, excessive force. You know, why do you need 3 police officers to arrest a 12-year-old that weighs like 100 pounds or less? And there's a lot of stuff that happened with that issue that we don't know about. We don't know what happened before. We only saw sort of what happened in the video. But you have to wonder, you know, why? Why arrest a 12-year-old? He's 12.
Yeah.
And there has to be another way to deal with the issues.
Well, and there's a lot of mental health issues too, right? Like the amount of the times of policing is used almost as like mental health workers. And police will say this themselves. Like we're putting into situations sometimes where, you know, it's very difficult situations. And I'm not saying that police, you know, police are bad. That's not what I'm saying. It's I think there's a lot of people that need to come together and have a very wide-ranging kind of conversation. Like, look, we touched crime. We've already touched like 6 different topics in the span of 5-10 minutes.
But it's the culture around it in this community, how we speak about it, and the policies we put in place to deal with it that's affecting how the police tackle this and how crime is being tackled.
Just tough on crime attitude is just going to result in more crime.
That's just the way I see it. You're a liberal snowflake talking about root causes.
Oh yeah, liberal snowflake.
I think you need penalties that match the proportion to the crime. I think you need police officers on the ground. You need active policing. I believe in community policing. So police that is integrated within the community and there's a positive relationship where the community feels that the police are partners, not enforcers, and that's it.
And that's the interesting thing about Scheer's announcement. There was no mention of community and programs and resources for people. It's all about cracking down.
Yeah, and that's the biggest issue. He doesn't even touch gun crime, like gun ownership, when talking about gangs. Like it was a very superficial take on combating crime that does not solve any of our issues when it comes to crime in the city of Brampton, which bothers me. And then what bothers me as well is the fact that Gail Miles and Pelleschi, like these are the councillors that are going sitting there and trying to have these conversations with the made up panels.
For sure. And what they thought was an official capacity, but they brought nothing to the table that was relevant to the city or that would have helped Brampton. That's the disappointing part for sure.
I'm looking forward to seeing what our council does moving forward. Gail Miles is retired now, so I don't think she's going to be as active moving forward. Well, hopefully not. We have a mayor that obviously was speaking tough on crime. I would like to see kind of what solutions he has and what opinions that the council has. And a guy like Harkita Singh, who was a school trustee, he was in these schools, he spent a lot of time in these schools. You know, hopefully there's a unique perspective that's going to come out of folks like that who are more engaged with the grassroots and where the community is today.
Brown versus Ford, part two. Will Brampton's dysfunction continue? Recently, Patrick Brown released a book titled Takedown, the Attempted Political Assassination of Patrick Brown, where he throws stones at quite a few PC insiders.
So we'll start with this. Alan Carter, who is an anchor with Global News, says, and he's quoting Doug Ford here, "I question his leadership. He did a disservice to the people of Brampton," says Doug Ford of Patrick Brown after the release of his tell-all book. So the big speculation for a couple of days was, will this or won't this, you know, affect the relationship of the premier with the mayor and Brampton's position in Queen's Park? If this quote is to be taken at face value, I would say we are kind of fucked.
I think that, Doug Ford has taken off the proverbial earrings. Like, he's ready to fight. I mean, Patrick Brown threw it down by... He throws stones at everybody in this book. There's quite a few people he goes after. Lisa McLeod's mental health. He questions whether she was faking it. He goes after Vic Fedeli based on sexual assault allegations that didn't actually come out to the public, and all sorts of other people. Like, if you look on Twitter, so many MPPs have released statements addressing this book and claims he makes. So he didn't really leave anybody unscathed. He also went after Doug Ford, who is like the biggest man child known to man. I mean, you can't expect anything but...
I don't understand the math behind this. How does Brampton win out at the end?
Brampton doesn't. Book? And it, frankly, I'm a little scared after Doug Ford's statement. He basically said, you know, I'm here for Brampton, but if I were this guy, I would have squashed this book. And he did a disservice to Brampton by publishing this, which is like a thinly veiled threat. Not thinly veiled. You know, it's like...
Doug Ford has, whatever he has said he would do, he has done.
And the thing about Doug Ford is, and we saw this with the Ford's top staffer intervening to have former Brown aide axed from new job, sources said. This was the Globe and Mail article that came out recently where Dean French, who is essentially the chief of staff to Doug Ford, or like his right-hand man on Queen's Park, called the Ontario Power Generation company, whatever it is, who just
Hydro
recently...
Hydro One?
It's Ontario... Power Generation.
Okay.
Okay, so he calls OPG and he gets OPG, Dean French does, he calls OPG and gets them to fire Ali Khan, who was hired as a senior executive, literally one day into his job. And that's going to cost Canadian taxpayers supposedly $500,000 in severance payments. But that is the degree to spitefulness that this team is not shy from conducting, right? So... Doug Ford will put his money where his mouth is, and if he needs to lay the hammer down, he obviously has no qualms about doing that.
He will literally kick... He's Godzilla, and Brampton is like that little tower he's waiting to step all over, frankly.
And it's not so much that, you know, Doug Ford's going to come out and be like, you know, I'm shutting down Brampton's hospital, and I'm going to be ripping up the Brampton's 410. And good luck driving down Steeles and Beauvais as like your main arteries. Here Ontario, McLaughlin and Ching and all these other streets. And good luck going north-south on Brampton. But that's not what he's going to do. What's going to happen is there's a lot of competing factors for a very small pie of funds. And it's getting even smaller under this government. And there's a million projects out there that are worthy of the government's attention, right? Brampton, I know we like to think it's the center of the universe. I personally like to think that. But the reality is the Treasury Board and caucus and the government, the bureaucracy, they're competing with a million different priorities. So if it's a competition between, let's say, three options, and it's usually multiple people at a level playing field that they're kind of looking at and saying, what one should we prioritize out of these three, four? Are you telling me that Doug Ford is going to be like, this Brampton one, let's prioritize this one over St. Catharines? Like, is that going to happen? I think probably not.
Hard no. Yeah, and we've talked about this on the podcast before. Patrick Brown has a lot of stuff he wants to do, and all of it requires at least provincial funding, if not provincial and federal funding. So you have to be able to go to the table and collaborate with the government. How do you do that when you basically crapped on every single person in a party you're supposed to be working on behalf of Brampton? I mean, I feel like we're going to end up as collateral damage here.
Yeah, it's It's tough to kind of see what value add the book has brought to the city.
It's not to the city. It's absolutely value to him and his retribution, it sounds like. I don't know that it does Brampton any favors at all. And, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think he should have squashed the book when he won? Maybe it was too far down the line to do that, but do you think he should have?
Yeah, I think he should have, but the problem is he's probably signed this thing in advance and it was coming out regardless of whether he liked it or not. And this book was written and set up before he became mayor. So for him, yeah, great. He wrote this book and by all means, you know, share your story. By all means, share it, right? Your version of the events, that's totally fine. But the fact that he won the mayorship, it's already tense to begin with. And then this book drops. And he lost the PR battle on the book too, because, you know, he starts talking about Lisa McCloyd's mental health issues. He absolutely loses that PR battle on the book right away because of that.
I question that too. And I question what editor sort of like let that fly, because you don't question people's mental health issues. You don't say that they're fake. That's just not inclusive. And you have to wonder what sort of culture will happen when, you know, he'll bring the city hall with that kind of attitude. Maybe it was just, it's the book and people say things when they're heated and people publish things when they know it's going to be.
I mean, Lisa McCloud is, you know, systematically pulling funding from people with legitimate mental health issues.
Yes.
So yeah, that's a whole other conversation. Let's keep this in mind. I mean, she pulled funding for a basic income project. She's going to restructure Ontario Works. There's a lot of things that's going to, you know, damage people with mental health issues. So, I mean, if, you know, if she has mental health issues, I mean, I think she should be more mindful of other people. Otherwise, I would suggest that, and I was going to get me under fire, but yeah,
it's not, just, yep.
It's not good.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't look good for the,
it's
for
not
her,
good,
for sure.
You know,
it's, yeah. Well, it's like it's not disgusting good. And cruel. Like those are the two words that were thrown out a lot about Patrick Brown's, allegations on Lisa McCloyd's mental health situation. And Patrick came back and said, if you read the book, you will see what I actually say about this. And it's much more than just me questioning whether or not her mental health issues were sincere or real. But no, the PR side of this, the book release was disastrous. Like everyone was shitting on this book.
I haven't seen one positive tweet from anybody legitimate from the PC party or anything. And there were some people that still supported Patrick Brown. Not one person has said anything good about this book.
And Patrick did say afterwards in an interview, I know, I don't believe this will actually impact my relationship with the province.
I don't think Patrick Brown understands
how relationships work.
I mean, I think he has to say that out loud, but like when you realistically speaking, like, come on.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me that these people are going to want to work with you after you've, you know, thrown them all under the bus. And again, like I said, we know Doug Ford holds grudges. The others might be willing to look past it, but not Doug Ford.
I want to mention this, right? I mean, oftentimes you'd end up with a municipal government that's run by a conservative and a provincial government that's run by a liberal or vice versa, right? You're going to have that. But that doesn't mean that the relationship is necessarily sour. They can still work together. But in this case, we're talking about a conservative thrashing on other conservatives. This is a, you know, drama playing out, internal PC party drama playing out in Brampton. So, you know, you would have gotten somebody with different political inclinations and they could still work together. But Patrick Brown has gone off and gone personal. Right. And people of different political parties, they may disagree, but they don't go personal usually. And that's the mistake that was made by Brown.
Yeah, and if I'm a city councilor, so there's one side is that the dysfunction at the higher level, level tiers of government. And yeah, we can rely on the feds. The feds are less than a year away from an election right now. Right. They're going to start gearing up for an election campaign. A lot of promises will be made, but they're transitioning out of governance into politics. So we're going to be relying quite a bit on the province here in the short term, especially as the feds kind of gear up for an election. I don't know what we're going to get out of that. Now you look at it from a more micro level here within the city of Brampton. If I'm a city councillor watching all this kind of unfold, I'm probably thinking to myself, I probably shouldn't get too close to Patrick Brown, right? Like we should probably keep kind of arm's length from the mayor, because who knows how aggressive Doug Ford or the PC party will get. And as far as the PC party is concerned, you know, Brampton is 3/5 an NDP city anyways, and they still pulled off a majority. You know, does Patrick Brown just become a punching bag and a
political costs they're willing to take on kind of upsetting people in Brampton. At the same time, I think folks in Brampton are kind of watching this in horror and being like, Patrick, man, what are you doing?
Exactly. I think we were all so excited on October 22nd when we saw council and the fact that there was a changeover. People really felt like, oh, finally, the dysfunction's over. Brampton can start anew, you know? And in some ways we have, but we still have this huge barrier, and it's going to be funding. It's going to be major projects we want. So, people keep saying, we need a new hospital. We need all these things. But like, how are we going to do that with a mayor who can't work with
people? I think I know how that's going to happen. You know that property tax freeze that Patrick Brown promised? Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen.
I mean, foreshadowing, hello, we knew this was not going to happen. Like, based on the projects he wants, there's no way that that property tax freeze was going to happen. I'm going to be really surprised if he can pull that off.
Just to get, you know, just to catch up in terms of our infrastructure deficit, we're going to increase our property taxes during this tenure. And that's probably going to happen. And it's because we've soured our relationship with the province. That's just going to give us less money. That's the reality.
Huge. And the current deficit
is huge. The reality, like, right? Like, you can talk about, you know, taxes this, taxes that, but at the end of the day, you voted for Patrick Brown, you're going to get more taxes because he basically squandered all his relationships with all levels of government, I'd say.
Yeah, and I mean, unless he's a magical unicorn that has money sitting around somewhere that he can throw at Brampton. I'm laughing to myself as I say this. Again, it's not going
to
happen.
It really comes down to council.
Maybe he can get it from wherever he got his campaign funding from.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, look, I think if council can be aggressive... Well, look, I think if council can be aggressive and they take leadership roles on projects, kind of absent of the mayor's office, like, it's just seen like an organic thing that's coming from the community of Brampton, that's probably a saving grace. Like, you provide an exit valve for the province to kind of turn around and be like, we're helping Brampton in spite of the mayor's office.
Yeah, and I think that will come with, you know, city councilors championing projects. And we're already seeing that, the university being a good example of some of them stepping up to the plate and taking initiative and doing things without the mayor. And it looks like that's what's going to happen the next few years. Luckily, we have some really good people at the table who can manage that.
Unless we have Gail Miles versus Pat Fortini kind of erupting again in this term of council.
Oh my goodness. So recently, the Integrity Commissioner came back with a report because Gail Miles allegedly printed some derogatory comments off of Reddit and slid them under Pat Fortini's door.
I wonder what
her
Reddit handle is.
I know, right? I didn't even think she knew what Reddit was. So I'm really impressed here. So apparently, I don't know what the comments were regarding.
So
I guess
that's the allegation. That's the allegation. The Integrity Commissioner, there was a report that came out that suggested, or actually that stated that it was actually her computer.
Hold on, how about we rewind computer. A bit? So what's the actual allegation? Like, what's the fact?
Oh. Pat Fortini said, Gail Miles printed these derogatory comments and slid them under my door. And I would like to open a report to say that this was I don't know what the right terms are, but that this was against council code. That essentially she treated me badly, and that she also used resources from council to print some pretty bad stuff.
So here's the thing. She denied that she ever slid the comments under the door. And when they actually looked into it, it turns out it was her computer that printed the comments. So, I mean, apparently she wanted it for her own folder, for her own safekeeping. I don't know why you'd want to print nasty comments about somebody and keep them in your
own
folder.
Unless you had some use for them.
Right? I don't know who slid them under the door.
So, yeah, but, the report found that they could.
She's the one that printed them out.
They couldn't verify who slid them under the door.
It's like a game of Clue.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder who it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's all just hypotheticals.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Of course. Yes. So, I mean, we'll probably see less of that drama, fortunately and unfortunately, because it's really entertaining to read about this stuff. But, like, I'm happy that this new council seems like they'll probably get along a lot better.
Yeah, City Hall is just a wild place. I think it's like it's this little world.
Real Housewives of Brampton. Yeah, City Hall edition.
It's nice and cozy in City Hall. I hope that this city council is more cohesive and not, you know, secretly sliding derogatory comments underneath the doors of their offices to just take shots at one another, because I truly believe it's up to our council to ensure that the next 4 years of Brampton are successful. They need to step up to the plate, especially if Patrick Brown continues to burn bridges left, right, and center with the current PC government that's there for the next 4 years.
And that is all for today. Thanks for listening in to the Brampton Talks podcast. For more details about any of the stories or topics we discussed this week, check out BramptonIst.com.